And welcome back this hour as we continue chatting about privacy issues with Liz McIntyre. We'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Liz McIntyre with us. We'll take calls as well. Liz, there's an article called Article 13. Tell us what this means because, well, it's something brewing in Europe and that's not good and it could affect us here.
That's right. Article 13 is also known as the European Copyright Directive, and it is being a law that's pending in Europe. There's going to be a vote on it coming up really soon, July 4th. And it would force all online platforms to prevent the uploading of copyrighted content without permission. And this is a real problem for the Internet because, as you know, George, we love the Internet because we get to upload cat pictures, news stories, and, of course, memes are everywhere. We love taking pictures and images and transforming them into something that's creative and says something about, you know, what we're thinking. But if Article 13 passes, at least the people in Europe would not have the right to necessarily do that. Big platforms like Facebook and Google and so on would have to restrict what they place on the Internet if it's copyrighted material. And this is really a burdensome thing because they would have to imagine everything that's copyrighted in the world, and they'd have to compare everything that's uploaded against this list, which is just like almost impossible.
It is impossible. It's crazy. But this right now is only for Europe. So how could it affect us here?
Well, it actually could, because just like there's something called GDPR, where we got some good privacy benefits, you know, because what Europe wants, and there are all these big fines, big companies want to, you know, satisfy Europe. And so Americans get the benefit of that. But in the reverse, if Europe says, hey, you know, companies, you can't upload copyrighted content without permission or paying somebody for the right to do that, they're not going to want to necessarily set a separate policy up just for the United States because they want to work around the world. And my gosh, what if they make a mistake and they think they're uploading content from the United States and then it's really content from Europe and there are these huge, you know, penalties. So it could come back to bite us because if Article 13 gets passed and the EU prohibits copyrighted content from being uploaded without permission or for paying for that content, these companies might say, hey, look, we just have to have a uniform policy. We can't figure out who's coming from where, right? And so that could definitely hurt us. So the U.S., people in the U.S. should also be very interested, and I encourage everyone to please take a look at Article 13, and certainly your European listeners, please get on board. Please fight Article 13 because it could really kill the Internet.
Well, it could go the other way, though, too, Liz. I mean, U.S. companies could say, who cares about Europe? We just won't feed our data to them. Is that possible?
Well,
they'll just simply say, so if the Europeans say we don't comply, who cares if they look at us or not?
Well, that's a possibility. But, oh, my gosh, you know, the Internet is a worldwide platform. It's supposed to be. I mean, it's the people's, it's the biggest town square. It's the world's town square. And do we really want to cut ourselves off from communicating with everybody in the world and seeing all the world of possibilities? I mean, that would destroy the Internet that we know and that we love. And so hopefully, you know, with all the protests that are going to be going on in Europe coming up and all the articles that are being written and people are being educated, and hopefully the people who are making these decisions are being educated as to how difficult this would be and how this would hurt commerce, how this would kill startups who could never afford to look at everything that they would be uploading.
Sure.
So hopefully, you know, better angels will prevail and that we will not have Article 13 affect our Internet.
Is it conceivable that Article 13 will not be enacted?
It is possible. It's very possible, and we're very hopeful for that. And the real key here is for people in Europe especially, to get out there and protest. There are a lot of protests coming up this next week. There's a vote coming up in July. Get with your representatives in Europe there. Please talk to people about it. And people in the U.S., you know, we can get on board, too. We can make ourselves known and say what we have to say. Let's keep the Internet open and free. We need to have this world square open and free and know everything and have the opportunity to see every corner of the world and what's available.
Who came up with this idea for Article 13 in the first place?
Well, you know, there are always some really good, well, people who think they're doing the right thing. There are a lot of companies that would really like this to go into play. Of course, companies that have their content pirated and placed on the internet all the time. And it's a really big problem. Okay, it's a huge problem because a lot of companies lose money when their movies or their music or whatever, they get uploaded.
Oh, yeah, I get that.
Right. So it was well-meaning. But when you look at it and you carry it to, the ultimate conclusion, it would kill the internet. In fact, probably ultimately be a backlash against these companies that are hoping for relief from copyright infringers because, nobody may even know about them. These companies may not even be able to get their word out to the people they want to communicate with if this passes.
Well, here's an example. We have a picture on our website, coasttocoastam.com. It's our feature story of a picture of what could be a little Bigfoot in the background. That's an interesting thing, little Bigfoot. He's way in the back. That's why he's little.
Right.
And it was sent to us by the apparent photographer who took the picture. Now, we've posted it. We assume that the photographer's the one who gave it to us. But what if it isn't? What if it's a picture taken by somebody and he lifted it off of a magazine or something like that? How would we know? So under Article 13, that's not even going to get up on the website, right?
Well, no. Because you would be risking it. Of course, you're in the U.S., so it's not as big an issue for you. But if you were a U.K. company, or you were anywhere in the European Union and you did that and this law were enacted, then you could be in trouble. You could be responsible for uploading copyrighted content and not paying for it and be fined. Everything hasn't been worked out yet, and we really hope this doesn't pass. But you're right. Pointing that out just shows people. And, of course, the memes. What would happen to all our memes?
Well, away they would go.
Away they would go. Well, at least the ones from Europe.
Let's go to the phone. You ready?
I am ready.
It's Thomas in Kent, Ohio, to get us started. Hey, Thomas, go ahead, sir.
Hey, George, how's it going?
It's going great, thanks.
All right, pleasure to talk to you. I kind of want to take a little bit of a coast-to-coast twist here.
All right.
Now, in the Book of Revelation, John kind of has this vision of going into the future and seeing people only being able to buy goods through a mark on their hand or on their forehead. And I kind of wonder, I know we're very close to this technology with the RFID chips, and I'm kind of wondering how that would kind of tie into the mark of the beast, and I kind of wanted to get her thoughts on that.
All right, Liz, go ahead.
Okay, well, that's a really interesting question, Thomas. And, for a lot of years, I always caution people, don't call it the mark of the beast because, well, first of all, we don't know what the mark of the beast would be, and there's a lot of controversy about whether there is even such a thing. But let's say there is such a thing and that this is something that's literal, that there is this mark. An RFID tag is lumpy and bumpy. And in the book, it talks about having a mark in your hand or your forehead. Now, the hand, I could possibly see a lumpy chip in the hand. It's not so horrible. But a lumpy chip in your forehead, how many people are going to go for that, really, right?
Not a lot.
So I think for that reason alone, for a long time, I said, look, don't even think about it, right? But then along comes this variation of RFID, which is the tattoo. There's a tattoo made by a company called SoMark, and it was originally designed to tattoo cattle so you could identify your cattle from a distance using a reader device. And it works just like an RFID tag. It's like this magnetic ink, and from a distance, it will reflect back. If you power it up, you power up this ink with this external reader device, it would reflect back this unique number that's embedded in this tattoo. And so, wow, I imagine someone would probably go for a tattoo. A lot of people go for tattoos, especially if the tattoo were invisible. I mean, there are ways to make this ink so it can't be seen with the naked eye. So it wouldn't, mess up your forehead or mess up your hand, and it would be flat. It wouldn't be anything lumpy or bumpy about it. So if I were tying it into RFID, I would say, the closest thing that I've seen so far to what the Book of Revelation talks about is the SoMark RFID tattoo.
Liz, if I didn't get a Social Security number, I wouldn't be working. And not anybody would be working right now without Social Security numbers. So would they force us like that? Because if we didn't want to get a Social Security number, we don't have to get it, but you're not going to work. So what That's if they right. say, eventually, if you don't get an RFID chip or something like this, you're not going to be able to function?
And that's very possible. I could see something like a major attack, let's say a dirty bomb in a major city, for example, and then panic arises and, you know, our economic systems are crushed, you know, temporarily from everything that happens. And it's so destructive and people are angry and they're saying, we need to do something, right? So then what happens, the government might say, well, you know, we need to be able to figure out who the good guys and who the bad guys are, right? And people can forge documents, right? They can create fake driver's licenses and so on.
Oh,
so
sure.
We need to go further. We need something that's more of a permanent mark where we can definitely, it's something that won't get lost, you know, that's not easy to steal or whatever. And I could see them saying, look, here's the solution. Here it is. So I don't think it would take a whole lot. I mean, it's scary. We're just maybe one terror incident away from calls for something like that.
Well, in those kinds of cases, people generally will say, do what you can to save us. And they will follow and do just about anything. I mean, look what happened after 9/11, passing the Patriot Act and all that other stuff that infringed on our rights. People were willing to give up things under the guise of security and safety.
Right, absolutely. And they want the government to protect them. And the government, they'll let the government maybe mark them and keep their information in a database. But, you know, what's really remarkable, and Catherine and I put this in our book, Spy Chips, the most deadly force on the planet is not terrorists, it's not wars, it's actually governments. Governments kill more people than any wars at all, than any terrorists. And so, you know, we have to be very careful about the power that we give to our elected officials, that we give to our government, because that same government could turn against us at some point if the wrong person, you know, gets the key to the kingdom, or say we're invaded by somebody who accesses information. I mean, we have threats all the time from foreign governments accessing our databases, right? I mean, it doesn't even have to be an invasion where people actually come over and physically come here. It could be an electronic invasion of some kind.
Well, what happens if our power grid goes out? And so they create these special camps for people for safety purposes, and they say the only way you can get in is with a chip so we can get you to read through the scanner really fast.
That's right. And, you know, there's precedent for this, George. This is not just nonsense. I interviewed somebody when I was writing the book back some time ago. If you recall, there were refugees called the boat people who came over back, I believe that was in the 90s. And they suffered greatly. They came over in rubber tubes and so on and so forth. And they ended up in Guantanamo Bay, many of them, right? And they were looking for refuge in the United States. And these people came, and guess who was there to try their new technology? Well, it was a company with RFID tags. And said, hey, we need to process all these people. We need to keep track of them. We don't know who these people are. And at this time, they weren't injecting the tags into them, but they forced them to wear RFID wristbands to track them wherever they were. And so, you know, we have this precedent, and we have companies that are all too willing. In fact, I'm sure that company in Wisconsin, we've been talking about Three Square Market, they are so ready to be there to do any of these things. They are ready to they're chipping, believe it, they're chipping teachers, with hopefully external wristbands. I guess it's optional for teachers. They could probably get these chips embedded. They're tracking teachers and students, and they're tracking prisoners, and they're tracking their workers. The next step, wow, it would be heaven for them. Wow, look, we can track all the people in the United States. We've got this great opportunity, right? So, you know, people are looking for money, and people are looking for opportunity, and this would be a great opportunity for somebody to come in and chip the public either with physical, you know, chips under the skin or some kind of, tattoo.
Let's go to Mike in Houston, first-time caller for us. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, George and Liz.
Morning, Mike.
Liz, I'm in a lawsuit with a major insurance carrier, and in my deposition, they've asked me questions and knew exactly where I traveled 200 miles from Houston at each location. Uh-huh. I had my truck scanned. There was no GPS device on it, but I guess, can they track me through my cell phone, and is that legal?
They could track you through your cell phone, but let me ask you this. This, Mike, did you have a toll tag?
Yes, I have one.
Oh, Mike, we figured it out.
What is that? What is
that? Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. We have this in our book, Spy Chips. This is something that's been going on a long time. And, by the way, we feature Houston. Houston has an amazing, in Texas generally, they have an amazing interstate toll system and RFID tags, which they push heavily to save money when you go through tolls. They want you to just drive through those.
Oh, you
those
just answers. Flash your card, right?
It's actually in your windshield usually. It's just there, and it's typically an active RFID tag that can be read from a long way away. And they're not just reading those tags at those gantries where you see those things hanging down from those metal posts. So you go through and they can figure out that, hey, there's somebody with one of those toll tags, right? They're tracking them every few miles. They're a reader device.
Aha, so that's how they're doing it. They knew exactly where he went.
They could figure that out. So, Mike, I mean, it doesn't surprise me at all if you had a toll tag in your truck and you were traveling on anything but back roads, you know, that they could know where you were, exactly what time you were there.
There you go, Mike.
They knew the exact location and each city I was in.
Yep.
That's right. Yeah, and were you traveling on major toll roads?
Partly through Houston, but going into Louisiana, I don't know if there's any toll roads there.
Did they identify you at spots where there wouldn't be this kind of tracking technology?
Yes.
Okay, so it's possible then they piece things together. And it could be through your credit cards, too, because did you use credit cards in any of these places?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, geez.
So there are multiple ways they could do it. So if it's not the toll tag, then they could probably get a subpoena. And by the way, lawyers love this technology because they can subpoena these records, right, to say that, you know, hey, you know, Mike was in, you know, this restaurant in Louisiana, and he bought, you know,
unbelievable.
Oh boy.
What an invasion of privacy this is. He hasn't done anything wrong.
Oh, right. So, I mean, this, by the way, this kind of thing where these records for toll tags and these records for credit card purchases, and I don't really know so much about the cell phone data, because that's a little bit trickier, but I'm sure those records have been subpoenaed, and now with this new Supreme Court ruling, that's going to be interesting to see, you know. But I would think that through a subpoena, they'd be able to get those records because they'd have to prove that they have a right to get those records, right? That there's a reason for those records. So they can piece together so much about our lives and where we go just through these toll tags, through this, you know, just buying something at a store will put you at that store in that location at a certain time. And certainly your phone, if it's with you all the time and they get permission to get those records.
Well, yeah. Wouldn't it be something if you commit a crime and they catch you because of where your phone was?
Oh.
That could be interesting.
Yes, it's happened. I mean, there have been all kinds of things. And not just these things. Also, like those shopper cards. Any kind of things with numbers on them or tracking of any kind. There have been people who have sued stores before for slipping and falling. And then the store will go back and say, well, let's go through his shopper records. And, well, he bought a lot of alcohol, you know.
Yeah, or he wasn't even here.
Right.
Liz, we're going to come back and take final calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Liz McIntyre with us. We'll get to your calls as well. Our website, camcat.org, camcat.org. And how many years you've been doing this now, Liz?
Researching privacy and RFID.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh, forever. I mean, from early 2000s. So, wow, that's like probably 20 years.
That's a long time. What's new at Start Page?
Oh, StartPage, startpage.com, and I hope everyone uses it. It's a small step to protect your privacy. You get actual Google search results, but in privacy, Google doesn't see you, and StartPage does not collect any personal information at all. It's coming out with a brand new look and some new features, including a free proxy, an upgraded free proxy, so you can surf the internet in privacy as well. So when you get those results on the search page and you want to click and see a website, but you don't know, you know, what that website is and whether they'll put malware on your computer, you can just click the proxy button or the view privately button, and then you'll go there and they won't see you. They only see start page. So it's a great free service. I encourage everybody to at least take that one really small step to protect your privacy.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Steve in Seattle, Washington, west of the Rockies. David, go ahead.
Yes, I just want to elaborate a little on what your guest was talking about with the cell phones.
Sure.
So kind of a short story, funny story. About 4 years ago, I was working in the Middle East for the U.S. government, and everything she's talking about with that is classified. And I come home, and suddenly it shows up in the news, and I think a lot of that got leaked during the Obama administration. But, yeah, not very long ago, that stuff would have got you put in jail.
Yeah. Yeah, when we were writing the book, we got a lot of information that was, you know, not for public consumption. And we put a lot of, connected a lot of dots. And I will tell you that a lot of companies, and we were really concerned, the government was very interested in our work. We know private investigators looking at us. People were in our bank accounts calling relatives. It was really a scary time. But now it's pretty much out there, right?
Never. Did you have whistleblowers?
Well, you know, we did talk to some people who gave us some inside information, of course. Yes. But not really anybody. I wouldn't say that we got classified information. Let's just say that we found information that wasn't really expected for consumers to see.
Let's go back to the calls. Thomas in La Jolla, California is with us. Hey, Thomas, go ahead.
George, thank you for taking my call, sir. And Liz, you're doing great work with Catherine Albrecht, and both of you are magnificent. You know, my question, Liz, is that from where I am standing, it appears that Hollywood and the entertainment industry is making microchipping, RFID tracking, biometric, you know, surveillance very glamorous, very attractive. And you can look at movies like I, Robot, about a transnational corporation which wrist chips all of its employees and tracks all of its employees, or Minority Report, or television shows like V, or even the spy genre, such as Casino Royale, in which James Bond, now an icon, played by Daniel Craig, is microchipped by British MI6. And he hates it. He hates having this microchip in his body, but later it saves his life, you know, with a satellite uplink when he has a medical emergency. And I look at these movies and TV shows like V, as perhaps glamorizing, maybe making RFID, biometrics, you know, that type of surveillance as attractive, and making the argument that, well, maybe it is okay. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts about that. Most of these movies are over 10 years old, but they've really influenced how people think about microchipping, RFID, biometrics, et cetera.
I agree with you completely, George. I think that it softens the public and paves the way for acceptance, because we see somebody who's an icon, somebody we might trust or like, interacting with these devices. We see them in cool situations. It makes us think, wow, you know, I want to be cool too. I want to be like that guy. Or it's okay, obviously, you know, we get to kind of live vicariously, and we've survived it, so maybe it's all right. So yes, and I think right now what we're seeing along the same lines, not just in movies, but also just in real life, where we're having people glamorize the idea of body hacking and transhumanism, you know, the thought of making ourselves better people and hacking, how great it is. I mean, I don't have a problem with people doing what they want with their own bodies, But I think we also have to have that balancing voice that says, well, wait a minute, we have to think about the implications of this. And frankly, you know, technology is pretty cool. I like a lot of technologies, but with every technology, you have some drawbacks. And what I think we really need, if we want to enjoy any of these technologies, we need to have strong privacy law, a strong privacy law in place that addresses the modern technologies, because so we can feel comfortable, so I can use my cell phone, which I love to have. So I'm in like my car in a dark road and my tire blows out, I can call the tow company and not feel like I have to, you know, endanger my life going to find a payphone. But you know what? I also don't want to have a situation where I'm tracked through my cell phone without my permission. So we need to have a law. We need to have laws, perhaps, to cover that. And I think there's one law right now, which I'm really hopeful for, that will serve as a model. There's a California privacy bill that should be up for vote any day. And it gives California residents the right to ask what data is being collected about them and what's being done with that data. And they can also request that data not be sold. And so I think we need something strong like that in place. And in addition, that voice of reason, that balance, that balances out the coolness with the reality.
Liz, what do you think of facial recognition technology?
Wow. I think it's pretty scary because, you know, and it's not just facial recognition, all biometric types of data about us makes us trackable pretty much anywhere. When you think about biometrics, it's not just facial recognition, it's fingerprints, it's the way we walk, the way we type, the way we speak, voice prints. All of this technology, it's like we're getting to the point where when we walk out our front door, we can be tracked basically the moment we're in view of a camera.
That's right.
Or any other kind of tracking device. Everywhere we go, we get in our car, you know, and as Mike pointed out and proved with such a great real-life situation, you know, then our toll tag's telling where we are, right? And then we go to buy something, and our credit card's telling where we are. All of these technologies, they all come together, and it's this web of surveillance that's almost inescapable. And that's another reason that we need these laws to protect us from all of this.
Okay, back to the calls we go. Fran is in Knoxville, Tennessee. Welcome to the program, Fran.
Hi, George. Voted for you.
Thank you.
You're the best. Liz, when my dog, I had a 127-pound bull mastiff, Miss Ripley, when she was 8, I heard a lady on the radio say, don't chip your dogs because it's causing cancer. And I was glad I didn't chip her. But when she was 9, my vet convinced me, because she was getting older, if she got lost, we wouldn't be able to find her. So I chipped her. And I was hesitant. 6 months later, she died of cancer.
Was it cancer around that microchip?
I don't know. It was throughout her whole body, so they don't know where it started.
Wow. But you know what? That's a foreign body. That's a foreign thing. That glass encapsulated chip is supposed to be inert, and it's supposed to be something that the body would accept. But all the scar tissue grows around it. It's actually a wound in your body. And so, you know, everything goes around that and tries to protect the body from it, but sometimes the cells go out of control. And
well, two years ago, Liz, we got a rescue dog, and before we took her, they chipped her. We had her 19 months, and she died.
Was that all?
And now I'm afraid of cancer, and I'm afraid in the kidney area, and I'm afraid to get another rescue dog. I was looking at one. But there are these rescue clinics and anywhere, they're chipping the dogs now. And I wanted to do a rescue to give a home, but they're chipping them, and it's been such a pain in my heart to lose my dogs. I mean, just could hardly get over it. I can't.
Oh, it's got to hurt.
So I'm afraid to adopt another dog who has a rescue chip.
I am so sorry to hear that. And I love dogs, by the way, and I've got my own rescue dogs. And unfortunately, even myself, as a privacy advocate, my dog came chipped. I couldn't say anything about it. I mean, it was already done, and it's worse trying to remove the chip, I think. So I don't think you have a choice, really, when you want a dog and it's already chipped, you kind of got to accept that. Of course, I never paid for they always want to hit you up for paying for the tracking, you know, which I would never do. you know, it's not a high percentage of dogs that get cancer from these chips based on the studies, but there is a higher than expected rate of cancer around the chips. So it sounds like perhaps if the cancer was as a result of the chip, that you've gotten some, you've just had some really bad luck, because statistically, you know, it doesn't happen as much. You know, it's not super frequent.
It's not every pit that gets chip gets cancer.
Right. It's not a huge percentage of pets. So I would encourage you that if you love dogs, you love rescue dogs, not to let that deter you. But at the same time, you know, if you have a dog and you have a choice, I personally wouldn't choose to chip my dog. It's really, you know, people think it helps them find the dog, and it's only in very rare cases. And, of course, the chipping companies always make a big deal whenever a dog, you know, they find a dog from thousands of miles away. But the truth of the matter is you can't track a dog from a distance with these chips. I mean, unless you catch the dog and then you get him to a place that has the actual reader device that works with the chip, you know, you're not going to be able to figure it out. And if the dog has a tag on him or some other information, or like you're looking for the dog and you put out an APB for your dog, you probably have just about as much of a chance of getting the dog back by doing your own search and just by having the collar with the tag on it.
Liz, what a way to market to hospitals with babies being born in them, by going to the parents and saying, if your child is ever abducted with a chip that the kidnapper would not know about, we could probably find your child quickly and safely.
Well,
how many parents will say, all right, do it?
Well, you know, it's really sad. You know, the company we've been talking about all night, the company that chipped all its employees and is really looking to pursue this technology, on its website, and you can go there, it's Three Market, we talked about, they actually have a page on the RFID technology they're pushing, and they talk about keeping kids from being kidnapped. And I'm thinking, really? These chips, you can't read most of these chips from very far away, like maybe, you know, just a couple of inches away. So, you know, if a child's kidnapped, you're not going to be able to, like, point, you know, some kind of antenna in their direction and find them. And frankly, if a kid is chipped, and if kids start getting chipped, then people who would take these kids would get smart. And unfortunately, it could be a more brutal kidnapping than it would normally be, because if they suspect a chip, do you think they're going to leave it in there?
No.
They're going to leave it in there.
No, the question is, where do they start digging for it, right?
Right. But even so, I mean, usually you don't take kids out in public spaces when you've kidnapped them. And even if you did, you'd have to get them pretty close to a reader device for that to even be picked up.
And yeah, how far do these devices read you?
Well, the current chips are a very short distance. I mean,
you got to get pretty close, right?
You got to get pretty close, within like a couple of inches, really. It's pretty close. And some of the near-field chips that go in the hands, you know, some of those you have to get within, like, you know, less than an inch. It depends on the chip.
A couple of years ago, I had Catherine on my Beyond Belief television show, and she brought one of those credit card readers that you can just walk by somebody and get their credit card number.
Yes, that's right. They've done that. And, you know, that's not so hard to do, because if someone has, you know, a chip in his wallet or pocketbook or, you know, you walk by with a reader, you can get pretty close to them. You can bump up against them and get that number. Or if they have it in their arm, you could walk up close to them and get that number, scan it, and clone the chip. Now, I know the new chips have a little bit more security on them, typically, so that's kind of good news. So it's a little harder to do something like that. But still, you know, if somebody has the right device, or if somebody really wants to track it, and I'm sure if the government wanted permission to track somebody, like a felon, of course they're gonna have a way to do that. You know, they're gonna have some kind of a cell phone they're gonna require that you carry or whatever. There are ways around, even though the short re-range, there are ways around to track people from a distance. I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying, though, that in the situation with someone kidnapped, if you're trying to stay away from reader devices, and you don't have any obligation to report to a reader device, right, it's probably not going to be helpful.
Liz, give out your website again for everybody.
Well, camcat.org, that's camcat.org. And, of course, the private search engine, startpage.com. That's startpage.com. I hope everyone will make that small change and search privately. Instead of going to Google directly, go to startpage.com for your search results.
All right. Thank you so much, Liz. Stay in touch with us. Up next, the darkest time of night. Jeremy Finley joins us on Coast to Coast AM.